Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome back to Hot Takes and Deep Dives, and this is the third installment in our L Word trilogy. And today, I am joined by two professional L Word fans for a little L Word behind the scenes roundtable. We're going to talk about television contracts, renewals, their visits to the set in both LA and Vancouver. So let me introduce you guys. Ash Silver runs her extremely popular YouTube channel centered on L Word news and behind the scenes info. And Chris is the co-founder of the very first L Word website, the L Word Online, which I believe originally launched in 2004. Wow, wow, wow. Chris and Ash, how you guys doing?
Thanks for having us.
Just woke up, so I'm a little bit like, whoa.
Yeah, it's the other side here, so it's late at night.
I was going to say that we have to acknowledge that recording and scheduling this is a feat of our own mathematical prowess, because I'm obviously on the East Coast of the U.S. Ash is in the U.K., and Chris is in Sydney, Australia. So we're coming to you from three separate continents. I want to get into each of your backgrounds so that we can really kind of qualify your areas of expertise. I want to start with you, Chris. So did you start your site in 2004, like when the show first launched?
Yep, October 2003.
What was the impetus? Like, give me your whole journey with this.
My origin story.
Yeah, your backstory.
Yeah, so I had met Jess, who I do Drinks at Dana's with, through another TV show that we were like massive fans of.
What show was
that? Young Americans. And it was Kate Menning's first show. And we were both huge Kate fans, so we were following her career after she left that show, well, after the show finished. And so we had started hearing rumors that she'd been cast to play lesbian in an all-lesbian show. We were, like, freaking out. We're like, not only is she going to be playing a lesbian, but she's also in a whole show about lesbians. We were like, what? And then so I, being the research guru that I am, went to, like, find out everything that I could about it. And all the little tiny bits of information that I found out, I was like sending to After Ellen, because they were publishing like incorrect information and stuff. So I was like, no, that's not correct. It's actually this or it's that. And so at one point, Jess was like, why don't we just make our own website to this show, back when it was called Earthlings? And that's where it started.
And Ash, you struck total luck with your channel. Talk about the day you started your channel and how like that really, you had kind of like rocket fuel from your channel from the jump because of your specific circumstance.
Yeah, I had been wanting to make a YouTube channel for a while because I was in the process of like losing a lot of weight. And I said, oh, when I lose my first 100 pounds, like I'm going to do it. And it was just after Christmas, like really around this time, the very beginning of January. And I had kind of decided, oh, I'm going to do it on the L Word, because I'd done a lot of research and there was like nobody covering it at all. There was one other YouTuber, Evelyn Dar, who I'm friends with and you know too. So I would get the episodes super early because then the episodes were coming out at midnight Eastern Time US. on like Saturday night, but it was Sunday first thing in the morning in the UK. So I knew I can get up early and I'll be the first one. And so the day that I decided that I'm going to do it on the L Word, it just so happened to be the episode that Laurel Holloman came back in season one. So nobody else was really covering it, but it just was also that bit of luck that I was the first person to post about Tina coming back. I was the first person to post the clips and breaking it down. And obviously everybody wanted to talk about it. So it just kind of took off from there.
So before we get into more of your personal adventures relating to the show, let's address some common questions around Gen Q. Where are people like Carmen and Helena, the people who reasonably could come back?
I mean, obviously, like, Chris knows this better than anyone, too, that Sarah Shahi, especially when she was, like, begging to come on, season one, straight out of the gate, she was one of the first people to put her hand up and say, openly, I want to come back. And not everybody does, or not everybody is, like, clamoring for it like that. And then they rolled out this party line that they've been mentioning since then, that they're not going to have Carmen back because Sarah Shahi is not Mexican and she was portraying a Mexican character.
But who the fuck cares? No one was upset the first time.
No.
Marja said she asked some of her writers the first season and that was the answer. But there's also, I mean, there's so many angles that they could have played it. You don't have to be crazy creative to come up with some sort of circumstance. She finds out she's done, I don't know, they could have done something. They've
literally
done crazier
just
things.
Adopted. Just be like, her whole story could be that she's adopted.
And what's the deal with Rachel Shelley, Helena? Because she was supposed to come back in season two for something. And like, what happened? Because I know that it was her idea for Kate and Leisha to do the Pants podcast.
Sarah Shahi still would come back to the show and wants to and talks about it all the time, and even last year made a video begging them to take her back.
Like, oh my God. Recently, when,
just before Black Adam,
and just recently when Erin Daniels came back as Dana and she posted a video of her and Kate and Leisha, Sarah commented under it and went, oh my God, I wish I was there with you guys.
Yes.
So Rachel Shelley gave the idea to Kate and Leisha to do the Pants podcast, and she produced and even she edited the first couple of months that they did it. And it was just after, I think it was after Christmas time, they came back and all of a sudden they had a new manager. Rachel Shelley did like a lot of the Twitter stuff and they didn't really use the Instagram, and they flipped that. Like, now they don't use the Twitter, they only use Instagram. And they just said, oh, Rachel can't do it because of the time difference. And it was never mentioned again. They've never uttered her name on the show. When they made that list the other week about people they wanted to bring back, they didn't say.
Oh my God, you're right.
Helena.
Talk about how she was supposed to come back. Oh wait, was it like a COVID thing? Like, she couldn't travel?
It was season two. Yeah, she was supposed to come back in season two for the karaoke episode. And even when she couldn't physically come back, I spoke to someone who worked on season two, and I was asking them like, oh, because they were telling me like Aaron's coming back and some other people that are coming back in the finale. And I said, oh, is Helena coming back? And they were like, oh, no, she's not. But you got that thing last season. I was like, what do you mean last season? And she said, oh, well, Helena did the voice of introducing like Kate, Leisha and Jenna, or Bette, Shane and Alice when they did the karaoke. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they were saying, up until when they even shot, it was still in the script. And they were obviously going to add it in when they did the ADR at the end of the shoot. And it just never happened. But it's apparently still in the script that it's Helena doing the voiceover for like introducing them, because she couldn't physically go. So.
And so why not this season?
I don't know. There's what I was told from people who worked on the show is that there is a line of people who on one side were asked to come back, the people who've already been on the show, like Erin Daniels. And then there's the other side that's Mia Kirshner, who played Jenny, Sarah Shahi, who played Carmen, and Helena, Rachel Shelley, and a couple of other people, that it seems as though when this everything blew up in the first season, when the episode aired that they revealed that Jenny had taken her life, Mia Kirshner was very, very upset. Well, they didn't even talk to her either. And she did play that character for a long time. And she really put her like heart and soul into it, blood, sweat, and tears. And I just think she was really, really upset and angry about the ending of the character, because obviously Jenny was so complicated and had so many issues. And I mean, that probably does feel bad that they bring the show back and they just, you know, drop this one tiny little line in.
Right.
So she made it known on Twitter that she wasn't happy. And
she literally said, like, Jenny's not dead. She said, yeah, that's not true. Like, Jenny's not. Well, first of all, these are fictional characters. So that's one. Let's get that out of the way. But she's like, Jenny's not dead. And then she said some other stuff. The tweet is still there. If you like dig back for it.
Yeah,
it's there. But she's like, Jenny's not dead. And then said some other stuff. But yeah, it was clear that she was upset. But that's strange because isn't it fact that that they're all like still close with her? Like, wouldn't the news have gotten to her beforehand? Or maybe it was just the reaction because she probably got so many messages that day.
I don't know. The scene only had Jennifer Beals and Ari in it. And I remember hearing a story from someone else that basically when they were having that scene, it was, you know, it was one of the first episodes, everybody was new. And it was Ari Mandy told this story in an interview that basically Jennifer Beals was like telling the crew who hadn't seen the show, oh, in a joking way, like, my character killed Jenny. That's really what happened.
And like, as a joke? I mean, obviously, yeah, we don't know.
Which I
love. Oh my God, that's funny. So she's spreading rumors to the crew that she killed Jenny, just like for fun.
Yeah, like in a jokey way, yeah. But I don't know whether Kate and Leisha knew they were putting that in the show, because, I mean, if you would have asked me in season one, I would have said, absolutely. But now, I mean, I think we all know that the executive producer credit isn't as involved as we think it should be.
The show is so clearly afraid to bring up Jenny. And yet, I have a friend of mine who's like, what is with this show's obsession with Dana? Like, was Marja Lewis Ryan just a Dana super fan? Like, the amount Dana's mentioned is insane.
It's wild.
I mean, it's warranted. Like, I'm into it. Like, I always love Dana. But, like, the absence of all the other, it's so leaning in one direction. It's just so lopsided that it's silly. As far as, like, Laurel coming back, Ash, can you talk about what went into that? Because I know initially, did Eileen Chaykin or Marja Lewis Ryan approach Laurel Holloman to come back? Who was it?
Yeah, they did, as, like, the show, to ask Laurel to come back. And initially she said thanks, but no thanks. And it was Jennifer Beals basically went to dinner with her and pitched her like coming back to the show in any capacity, they'd make whatever work. Initially, obviously Laurel came back for 6 and 7, and then they approached her. Well, everything happened with COVID, so it all got drug out. And then they were going back to filming, and just before that, they approached Laurel about doing a 2-season thing with like 5 and 4 episodes this season.
Did she say no initially just because she has like this really successful art career? Like she gave up acting.
Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't act anymore. She said it would, I think there's some quote from her from a few years ago that she said it would have to be something like really, really special to bring me back to act.
Now, Chris, if we go back to the original, what I remember from all those years ago is that you would have pieces of the script on your site. Because I remember reading this shit 100 years ago.
No, yeah, no. See, what I did was quite clever because they couldn't come after us. So I did have the script pieces, but I didn't put them up directly. I would summarize them in my own words.
Oh, okay. But you were getting access to script before, I mean, well, that just alone is strange, but you were getting access to them like as they were shooting the show.
So we weren't given access. I just found them because things were not locked down as tight as they are now. It didn't take that much research to find them online.
Ash showed me what she described sort of like a treasure trove of like old script.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the treasure trove of a madman, truly. But yep. A couple of things stand out. Well, so number one, they're clearly sides. They're not like main scenes between, like, say, Alice and Dana necessarily. Like, they're largely sides. Like, it's for them auditioning side, smaller characters.
Yes.
So you found these online? Like, you didn't have a specific source?
Well, the source was a website, which I went and got them from. But they were, they were sides. For example, in like an episode, they might be casting for like, I don't know, 10 new characters. And then they would post various sides from that script. But basically a bunch of them either overlapped or they kind of, once you printed them all out, made up most of the whole script. And so it wasn't too much of an effort. You just kind of had to draw the line together of like, oh, there's two pages missing here, but you can kind of see what happened in between. And so you just kind of like guess what happened in between. And then that way you kind of already knew what was going to be in the episode.
Were they fairly accurate to what was eventually filmed and like put on screen?
Mostly. But mostly if you read them now, you're like, wow, why wasn't this the show? Like if they had filmed it as written, it would have been great. But there was so much changes between then and when it went to air that you're like, what did they do to this episode? They butchered it. They literally took out all the best bits and then just cut them out.
Like, give me an example.
Oh, like, for example, the one where they all go to prison.
Oh, yeah.
It was supposed to... Yeah, there was the whole episode was like a
wait,
really
Are you talking about in the first season or in the fifth season when they're visiting Helena?
I think it was called Locked Up.
The first season. Yeah.
Yes. So the whole episode was supposed to play out like an Orange is the New Black kind of fun. They're all in prison with every single stereotypical prison thing happening in it. It was a comedic episode. And then when we saw it, there was like all the fun bits were taken out. Like there was a food fight in there. There was like a butch trying to claim, I think, Helena. They got shower hosed down at one point. They tried to make a prison escape. Like there was all kinds of stuff.
Why would they take that out? Like, okay, I mean, I'm laughing.
Well, apparently, like Kate mentioned it on Pants and said that they actually filmed it too.
Oh, really?
And then they chopped it out for whatever reason. There was a lot that I was like, oh my God, this is going to be the best episode ever. And then we were so excited to watch the episode. And then I was like, what? What is this trash? Like, nothing like how it was written down.
And did you ever get in trouble for posting? Like, were you ever confronted in any way or like ever contacted by Showtime? I mean, this can be your journey to Vancouver. This can be this section of this podcast. Chris goes to Vancouver.
Oh, yes. We heard from their lawyers multiple times. They were trying to scare us out of like posting basically anything. They tried to get us on like copyright infringement of our t-shirts, which like we were very specific because Jess had gone to like school and learned all about copyright law back then. But as for confronting us, yes. So we finally decided we were going to go to Vancouver and try and get on the set and meet people. And I had enough contacts to line it all up. And so we did fly all the way to Vancouver. And
were you living in Sydney at the time?
Yes.
How long was the flight from Sydney to Vancouver?
Oh, I have no idea because at the time, so for the first 5 years of it, Jess and I were dating. So yeah, so she lived in Kansas.
Wait, where did she live?
She lived in Kansas City.
How the hell did you two meet?
Oh, no, through Young Americans.
Oh.
Like, so when the first show that we met through, we actually went to the... There was a fan meeting for the show of where they filmed it in a little town near Baltimore. And
Jesus Christ, this little Young Americans show, like, put your lives in motion. It's such a weird
Yes, it did.
Way.
Yes.
And can you believe, and also as an aside, like, can we talk about how the L word, like, for better or worse, has still had this fucking stronghold on all of our lives? Like, what is that? I mean, we can explore that in therapy later. Like, why? But go on. I want to hear about you in Vancouver.
But also just a quick side note as well. It's so weird that like a bunch of my exes all went, oh, by the way, I also met all my exes through your website, through the chat on your website. I was like, what? My head is about to explode.
So wait, if she was living in Kansas City, I mean, this is a little sidebar of your personal life. So wait, okay. You're in Sydney, Australia. She's in Kansas City, Missouri. Is that Missouri?
Yes.
Like, how often do you see each other?
So back then we were seeing each other about twice a year. Back then, that's all you got because there was no same-sex marriage. The visas were extremely hard to get to move over there.
How old were you guys? Yeah,
I was probably 26 when we met. So wow. 26 to like 31.
And you were so taken with this Young Americans fan that you were willing to just see this person twice a year. And call and that's your relationship.
Oh, right. Yes.
Sorry to put you on the spot. All right, let's jump to you. You in Vancouver. Okay, so you're like, okay, we're going to make the journey to Vancouver.
Yes. Yep. So we'd lined up everything. We'd talked to Eileen's assistant and been like, cool, can we visit the set? They were like, yep, cool. Like, get in touch with us when you're here.
After they've threatened legal action, they say, cool, come visit.
Oh, that... Yeah, those were two different departments. That was Showtime legal department. They were very much like, oh, we have no idea what that is about. Like, oh, you know, we just make the show.
They still play that game now.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know what that is.
Yeah, we don't know. That's a whole other area.
Oh, that's Showtime. That's not us.
Yeah, that's not us. But yeah, so basically we landed in Vancouver and I was calling the assistant and he was like, oh, yeah, cool. No, Eileen wants you, you know, to visit the set. And how does, I don't know, let's say Wednesday. How does Wednesday sound? And we were like, yep, cool. We'll be there. And we were very excited. And then on the Tuesday, we get a call from him being like, oh, yeah, sorry, we're really busy right now. And so Wednesday no longer works for us. Like, can you do, I don't know, Friday? And oh, also, can you meet somewhere else? It was like some random cafe outside of town. And we're like, okay. So we go to some random cafe all the way outside of town and we meet up with Eileen Chaykin and Rose Lamb, who was one of the executive producers. Yeah. And it was a very bizarre coffee date.
Please go into every detail. I'm dying to hear about this. This is the highlight of the episode so far for me. Okay, then what happened?
Well, it was weird in that, like, first of all, that Eileen barely spoke. She would speak a little bit, but then there was a lot of whispering to Rose and Rose did most of the talking. And Rose, like, maybe Rose is more intimidating, which she was, and Eileen maybe thought that would be better, but Rose was basically like, oh, like, she was like, thanks for coming. Okay, so we just need to know, where are you getting your script pages from? I was like, they're like, we need to know your source. So I told them where I got it from. Okay. Obviously after that, they shut it down. They proceeded to be like, oh, well, what kind of things do you want from us? And I was like, well, here's my laundry list. You know, like, basically at that time we wanted to do like crew highlights, like interviews with crew to see like, what do they do? We wanted to do cast interviews. We wanted to like have information on what artists are being hung in each scene, because that was one of the questions we got a lot, was like, what's that painting? And so by the way,
the irony of that is that there is an Instagram account called Bette Porter Gallery. And I think somebody brought it up to Jennifer Beals in an interview. And she was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Like, all the artists, they were like, no. It's basically just like a lesbian, like, Instagram, like, gossip account. And she was like, oh, like, she wanted it to be what you're describing.
We wanted to do that back then. We had all the ideas and they were like, yep. They were just like, you know, writing it in their notes. Like, yeah, cool. We'll get you that. And they kind of did in a way, like they kind of did like a half-hearted, here's a semi list. But again, it was just like a long list of artists with like no reference, no painting, like information. It was just like, here's some of the people we used. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, that's not exactly what I was after, but I'll take it. Yeah, and then they basically, like, sort of left that meeting. Like, we're still kind of, like, in a huff of, like, what's just happened. They're like, okay, bye, and they've driven off, and we're like, what about our set visit?
Did you get to go to the set?
Yeah, well, they didn't bring it up, so I was, like, calling the assistant. Like, so they've just left, and we have no idea when we're supposed to come to set. And he's like, oh, didn't they talk to you about that? I'm like, no. So we kind of had to, like, force ourselves in again to be like, can we visit? And so they scheduled us to come on a day when there was like no one there. It was completely empty, no one on set. There was like tumbleweed, and they had like some junior 18-year-old intern take us around the set, and we weren't even allowed to take any pictures, of course.
And it was so, like, which this. So which sets did you see?
So this would
and
have
also
been,
what year is this, like, what season?
So this is probably in between. Ash, when was the season where like Alice and Dana are chasing each other in that car chase scene? Is that three?
At three. Yeah, you've told, yeah. I think so this we've is, worked yeah. it out before, it was three, yeah.
So it was in between season two and three. So they would have been shooting three. It was basically all of the apartments, so people's houses, Jenny's living room.
Did you get into like Bette and Tina's house? That
I think
set?
Yeah, there was a living room, yeah, because I think there wasn't there like Angie's christening birthday party, something like that.
Oh yeah, that Al
because there was balloons and stuff.
Yeah, the half birthday thing, yeah.
So, and then we saw Alice's bedroom, which had the shrine to Dana. And we were like, what is that? And they're like, come along.
And did you?
And I was like, that better not be what I think it is, because that's a dumb storyline.
Okay. Yes, it was a dumb, very, very dumb storyline. And did you get to meet any of the cast during that visit?
Okay, so we left the set really disappointed because there was absolutely no one there. Like, not even Eileen, no, like, there was just this, literally this intern and no one else. And we were so disappointed. We'd parked down the end of the street and we were like, oh, this sucks. Like, and so I was like, okay, here's a plan, right? The next person to walk out of that building, if they get in a car and drive off, let's follow them, because I bet, because basically what they told us was they were filming on location that day and they wouldn't tell us where, because we were like, oh, cool, can we go watch? And they were like, no. Okay, thanks. And so I was like, let's follow the next person that comes out of the building and drives off, because they're probably driving to set. And so we're quite far away, so the person's quite tiny. They get out, get in the car, drive off. And we, like, stopped following this car. It turned into an actual, like, Alice and Dana car chase scene. And we're, like, following them all the right way around Vancouver. And we're actually in, like, a higher SUV, and they're in, like, a low regular car. And at one point, you know, when you're trying to not look like you're obvious following. So I had a map that I was like.
And this is so insane.
At some point, okay. Yeah, at some point we, like, ended up being, like, not behind the other car, but, like, in the lane next to them. And so I quickly glanced down to see who it was, and it was Erin Daniels. And I go to just, oh my God, that's Erin Daniels. And she's like, shut up. And I'm like, no, it's really Erin. We're stalking Erin Daniels.
So did you go to set?
No, because she stopped at a Starbucks, and so we didn't know what to do. And so Jess dropped me off and kept driving around the block while I was standing out the front of the Starbucks. And I'm like, do I go in? Do I not go in? Do I go in? Do I not go in? So I didn't go in. And then she got in and left and we lost her. But yeah.
Wow. Now, Ash, you actually were invited to set of Generation Q. While Chris is sort of like the villain in her story, you actually are the hero of your story, because you've somehow ingratiated yourself to the people working on Gen Q to the extent that they you tons of information. So how did you get invited to the LA set this year? This is mere months ago. This is a couple of months ago.
Yes. The highlight of my L Word career. Honestly, I don't know. I have no to the L Word anyway. You know, like, I've worked in media and movies and TV shows, but I had no connection to the L Word prior to starting my channel. And I literally, how I started, because in the beginning, like, I was just doing, like, reviews and stuff. And then people would, like, ask me lots of questions about things, and because I knew about television, I was able to explain why somebody wasn't in an episode or this or that or contracts.
I want to get into that with you. I find that all really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too. And also, I don't think the everyday person thinks, oh, I'm going to follow, like, everybody who works on this show because they post stuff. So I would just, like, follow all the crew, anybody associated with the show, follow everything, and then, you know, repost social media and things. And that's how I started growing it. But then over time, like, it was just, honestly, like, a lot of the time it was just being really nice to people and sending them a little DM, or that's really how, like, a lot of it started. And because, especially with a lot of the writers, this is really, like, the first time that they'd worked in TV.
They don't know enough to talk to, like, random people on the internet. they missed that memo.
Yeah. And I've just always, as well, I would never burn anyone, or I always keep things, like, anonymous. And there's a lot of people that I have had really good relationships with, say, there's someone I had a relationship with over 2 years, and I never asked them for information or anything like that. And I would never just message someone and say, tell me this, time ever. I've never said that to anyone. And it's just through the process of building these relationships. And most of the people who give me information now, it's because I did have a relationship with them for 2 years. And then once they stopped working on the show, they're like, oh, my NDA doesn't work anymore. So, you know, you've been cool for 2 years. So guess what? Here's all the information. So that's the case a lot of the time. But with, like, obviously the getting on set, it was honestly 100,000% Marja who let me come, but getting really, really, really down to it, I just asked. And she said, uh-huh. Yeah. So I asked her and said, hey, it was right around when Laura Holloman was having her show in July, and we're not best friends or anything like that, but I will have little conversations with her every so often about certain episodes. And I had sent her a message saying like, oh, I'm going to Laurel's show, and was
Where was that?
It was in London.
Okay.
It was in London. And Chris and Jess and I, because Chris and Jess were in LA at that time.
And we had asked to like visit the set and all the things. Actually, no, the thing I was trying to push is I wanted to be a background extra, because that's what I do in my spare time here. I wanted to be a background extra, and I got no reply.
Yeah, when I was going to Laurel's show, I think that was right around the time you sent that, I sent a message saying, oh, I'm going to be in LA, which of course I wasn't. I just was chancing my luck. And so she responded and said, basically, no one has been on the set since season one, and because of COVID. Yeah. And so she said, no one's been on set since season one because of COVID, but let me see what I can do, but don't get your hopes up. So then like 2 days later, it was when I was at Laurel's show, she sent me a message back and she was like, get in touch with my new assistant, because I knew her previous assistant, and she'll figure it out. She didn't say like, oh, you're going, she said that she would meet with me, because I think then she wasn't 100% sure whether it would be okay. And then over like the few weeks, she just left it as like, I'll meet up with you, whether it was going to be coffee or whatever. And it really wasn't until pretty close down to it that I knew, okay, I'm going to go to the, cause they made me do like obviously all these COVID tests. And that was the biggest thing Showtime's ever done for me, pay for my COVID tests.
So which episodes were you on the set for?
They were in the process of finishing 8. I met M when I was on set, and I think it was the next day was M's last day. So they were finishing 8, and they were also filming episode 9. And the day I was there, they were having the table read for the finale.
Very cool. Did you get to meet anybody on the set?
Oh, yeah. I met Jamie Clayton I spent a couple of hours with, because she took me around like old Dana's and stuff. And then, well, it was really strange what they did, because I had no intention of meeting, because I even said to Marja when I asked her, I was like, listen, I don't expect to come in there and be like, you know, hey, Jennifer and Laura, you know, I just said like, I'd love to come and see it. That's all it was. So then whenever they had said yes, they set up this meeting with me, with Monica, who's Marja's assistant, someone from the marketing department who didn't turn their camera or their voice on, and Kelsey, who is the old senior manager for the social media marketing. And mm-hmm. her and I always got on great. She always asked me to do like little things. So we had this meeting, and they basically said, we'd love to film it if you'd let us film it, so that we can, you know, do some little social media things with it. And what we thought would be really great is if when you get here, we'll have, you know, you can talk to Marja for a bit and do some questions, and then Marja will show you around the Alice sets. And then they said, we would love to have someone from the show show you around Dana's, and it would be really cool if it was like your favorite character, because obviously your audience knows that, blah, blah, blah. And so they said, so who, you know, who is your favorite character? I said, well, you know, obviously like the answer is Jennifer Beals and Seppi. And they never said, oh, we'll see what they literally said, no problem. that will be no issue. And I was like, okay, I found it hard to believe, just knowing what I know. And then it was,
but
even
you didn't know,
more.
Did you know that at the time? Did you know what we know now? Did you know that before you went to LA?
No, because specifically, I didn't know that Jennifer Beals was only in 4 episodes this season. I found that out literally when I was in LA. And Gigi, I found out on the set because the costume designer accidentally told me that she'd left the show. And Showtime even cut that out of the videos that they filmed of me because they finally gave me access to them.
Like, that's not a surprise. Like, why would they leave that in? I mean, that would be amazing footage just like put on your channel.
I know.
Your real-time reaction.
Action. My head exploding in the costume department. No, just the confusion of like, what do you mean?
Yeah. I also would have loved to have on footage the, I really, Marsha's assistant is amazing. Monica, she's so nice. But I would have loved to have seen her face because she probably in her head, she's like, the one thing not to say in front of this person.
Why is it that Jennifer Beals and Sepideh Mowafi's names are still credited as actors on every single episode? Like, wouldn't they just not be in the episodes that they're not in, their names?
So usual television, I'll use examples that like everybody knows. So say a show like The Office, which has, you know, a big cast and those characters like Pam, who's played by Jenna Fisher, and Angela Kinsley, who plays Angela, both of those actors were pregnant when they were on the show. So when those character or when those actors are on maternity leave, they would still be credited for those episodes. It's if you appear or not, whether you get paid, but you'll still be credited if you're a series regular. However, the L Word is set up completely different because of this being like a legacy show, Jennifer, Kate, and Leisha being the legacies. And they have totally different contracts to like anybody regularly would have on a TV show because they carry so much more weight. Someone who works at Showtime told me they are being paid for the entire season because of what's in their contracts. And I'm sure these contracts were like absolutely top notch in order for them to come back.
I mean, the number one question on everybody's lips that no one is really answering is, why is Gigi, like, what happened with Gigi? And also, like, what's the deal with Jennifer Beals? And there is some crossover.
The thing also is that people will always look at what people say in interviews and all these things, and they're not going to say, oh, this happened and this happened. Like, they all have NDAs. They're not allowed to say these things, especially when they're still being paid for the episodes. No writer or showrunner in their mind, in their right mind, would write out their most popular character from the original show and their most popular character from their new show. Danny and Gigi was the future of the show. It would be insane to do this if there wasn't some sort of a reasoning or an impasse that they literally couldn't go
past. Well, what would the L Word be without background political drama? They're known for their, let's just say their lesbian sapphic chaos.
Honestly, it's so funny though, because the Chris's treasure trove that she gave me, mm-hmm. I said to you, the stuff that's written, that stuff's from when they were filming season 3. And it's so crazy because that season is when Jennifer Beals was pregnant. Mm-hmm. So she wasn't in the show as much. And what they're writing, even about Eileen Chaykin, it could have been written right now if you just subbed out Eileen's name for Marsha's. It's freakily accurate for what people say now.
I mean, like, in short, there was some sort of issue between Seppi and Jennifer Beals. We don't know what it was. There was some kind of issue. We know
probably
that.
Jealousy.
I don't believe that. To me, that's crazy. I don't know. It made me wonder if there was like a COVID thing. Like, I'm looking for a more practical, logical answer. But apparently, like, from what I've heard from like more than one source, is basically it was an unresolvable HR issue. And was it Showtime or production? Was it the network or was it just like the production? Showtime. So Showtime basically said, this is irresolvable between these two. One of them has to go. And Seppi bowed out because it's Jennifer's show. Ash, like, do you know if these things were like, do we know the timeline
This all happened very close together because, so whenever season two ended, October-ish, I basically was told without being told that they had been renewed about a week after the show had ended. And that's when I started saying on my live, I don't know this for a fact, which is what I normally say, but everybody who I use as sources right up to the top were telling me, you know, we're getting the show back. And it got, because a lot of time went by and they hadn't renewed it, there was so many people that were like, you're wrong, it's canceled. And more people were telling me, no, it's renewed. And I couldn't at the time work out why we were waiting so long to give the official green light and why they hadn't said anything, but it's because all of this was happening. Mm-hmm. So it basically was Seppi's going, and then, you know, I don't know the exact timing, but very shortly thereafter is then when the whole thing with Jennifer only doing four episodes and being gone.
I mean, Eileen said in my interview with her that it was like she has personal stuff going on in her life, which may be true. I mean, who, we really don't know. Like, I'm sure that may be true, but also it's not a, have you ever seen Marja and Jennifer Beals in the same room? So
wait, weren't they at the premiere together?
Okay, maybe day one.
Day one.
Maybe day one. But like when Jennifer Beals did that event in San Francisco, who did she pull? She pulled Eileen Chaiken. Like they have a really strong relationship even now.
Maybe Eileen never told her no.
Oh.
And maybe Marja did.
Oh. Jennifer Beals really is the reason that we're getting sort of the Bette and Tina happy ending.
Because she's always been so open about the fact that when the show came back, I think she thought, once I get Laurel on board, it'll be Bette and Tina again, because that's the story she's always wanted to tell. She's always wanted to be behind that. And when it just wasn't happening, people forget that Showtime calls a lot of the shots. Like everything we see is approved by Showtime.
Way more than Eileen Chaiken is going to tell you in my interview with her. It's not true. I know for a fact a lot of what you said. There were other factors at play. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's Showtime. Like a showrunner, not at a level, like maybe a Michael Patrick King, has superior power, or a Shonda Rhimes. But these like young showrunners who have never done it before, they just don't.
No way. When a season starts, they will be told at the beginning of the season, this worked last season, this didn't work. We want you to do this, do that, write this story for Finley, write this story for so-and-so. For all we know, that's where a lot of these like one episode, like Finley's mom coming back, because they are constantly, I've been told this by multiple people on social media seeing this, and they know how many people like each character. Like, why do you think that they use Bette and Tina and Danny and Gigi in all the marketing, despite them being in like not even half the episodes? So Showtime will be telling them, we want these storylines for these people. They approve the scripts before they even start filming. They approve the shots. They approve like every single direction that everything goes in. And they approve the edit. Like they're not sending an episode out without Showtime's like rubber stamp on it. So people forget, and they'll, you know, say, oh, the writer's this and that. And yes, like everybody shares the praise and the blame, but it is Showtime that ultimately, it's their money that's making this. So they're the ones that have the ultimate say, the same way they have the ultimate say whether the show comes back or not.
I don't think it's that people forget. I think it's people don't know, because they've been told something else about television forever. There are two big examples of this. The two things from the original. Number one, Dana dying, like Erin Daniels being written off the show, and also season six of the show. Both of these were mandates from Showtime. These did not come from the brain of the writers.
I knew it wasn't just Eileen. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't Eileen's decision, that it was something else. I didn't know it was necessarily like budgetary, I don't think. Yeah.
The real story there, allegedly, is that the new president of Showtime, who came in, I think, around the second season, was this guy, And around that time, the cast banded together, kind of like the cast of Friends, to get salary increases. They were all making very, you know, except for like Jennifer Beals and Pam Grier, the others were paid like, you know, whatever you're making on a cable show for your first season. And Jennifer Beals had them band together, like the cast of Friends, and come to the negotiation table. And the president of Showtime said to whoever and whoever the other executive producers
are. Powers that be.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just say the powers that be. I don't want to always name Eileen because, like, we don't know. Yeah, I mean, who
it's
knows?
Probably Rose Lamb.
And it, when it was, okay, we will bump them up to this for season three, but you're writing one of them off because they need to learn that they are expendable, allegedly.
Yeah, they already had that information from Marina in season one, who wanted more money and basically was told to walk.
That's true. That happened with her. And
she was an example of like, hey.
Right. But yeah, basically the same thing happened again. Also, I believe this is actually also true with Sarah Shahi. I think because her career was exploding and she exploded in popularity, her reps were trying to get her a huge raise for season four. And ultimately, they couldn't reach an agreement. She was trying to make it work. She would have stayed with the L Word if they had paid her what she could have made on another show. And that's the truth of what happened there. And what I've heard as far as season six was that, once again, this wasn't their idea. They said, okay, so normally there were like 12 episodes per season. They were like, okay, you'll get a final season, but you're only getting 8 episodes. And you need to make it an event.
That would have been so easy. Just put a wedding at the end.
Yeah.
I know. I don't know.
They anything.
In terms of like a mystery, like a, I don't know. I don't know where the mystery thing of who killed Jenny came from, but maybe that's the best they came up with.
No, I think that was just Eileen trying to make it interesting.
Well, that's what she said. That's literally what she said. Probably they pitched a whole bunch of different things to Showtime. Mm.
And that's the one they went with.
Correct. Correct. Finally, you knew that Showtime actually wanted them to film this current season of Gen Q, season three, back in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
What is that story?
So the show obviously costs a lot of money to make. It's in LA, which significantly increases it. It films in a place called Culver City, which they have a really big set, like with soundstage, and they've built out an interior Dana's and exterior Dana's, all of this super expensive. They have an enormous cast with three big legacies. And normally, and it's interesting what you were just saying before about Jennifer Beals, you know, banding everyone together, because that's her sort of being a star for a long time, knowing the value in that. Because usually if you say tomorrow the three of us are cast on a TV show, we would, and it was just like a regular, like Showtime's new show, like the way I was talking about Yellow Jackets, usually if you're not known or anything like that, you'll just get a very standard rate, and they will lock you into that for usually 5 years. So it's only if you have substantial power that you can go back to the negotiating table and say, you know, literally Yellow Jackets, like they will have had a huge explosion of that show because it's been so popular.
But don't you get raises every year?
I mean, they'll be worked into the contracts, but if you're starting out, say, I'm just pulling a number out of the air, say you're on 60,000 an episode. And you, again, Showtime shows only do 10 episodes a season. It's only filming this chunk of time. So, and as well, Gen Q, a lot of the cast miss an episode. Jennifer, Kate, and Leisha get paid no matter what because of their like legacy contracts. But I would be really surprised if that was the case for the Gen Qers, because it's usually, if you're not in it, you don't get paid. And I think that's why they were doing the phone calls with Shane and Alice, because that's kind of like an old TV trick for getting people who are on maternity leave paid. They'll either say you're going to miss.
But they were still working. They missed those episodes because they were shadowing.
Yeah.
Because they were directing the last two. That all makes sense. But wait,
what was I saying? Okay. So I'm thinking again.
You said Jennifer Beals banding them together.
Oh yeah. So Jennifer Beals banding them all together is a really smart idea because they wouldn't know to do that. I'm sure Kate and Leisha, that was like basically their first job. And
don't tell that to Chris here. Her favorite show, Young Americans.
But like, you know, first like really big show and like a bit, because wasn't Young Americans on the WB?
Yeah.
Yeah, they pay them like, they used to pay them like shit. Same with like CW and stuff.
Let me get this right about Young Americans. Was Young Americans on with like Dawson's? Like I love Dawson's Creek, yes, and Felicity. Yes. Was so this one of those shows? But I just didn't watch it.
Well, yes, it was. It was actually the summer of 2000. It was a Coca-Cola limited edition special series, but it was also supposed to be the spin-off to Dawson's Creek. Because the very first, actually, they introduced the character of Will, who's the main character of Young Americans. They put him in that final episode of the season of Dawson's Creek to introduce his character. He was a cousin of, Pacey? Oh God, what's his name? Joshua Jackson.
Pacey, yeah. I was right. I was even kidding.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So it was his cousin. Yeah.
Did Kevin Williamson create Young Americans as well?
Yeah. No, no.
Oh, somebody else did the spinoff?
That was Steve Anton.
Okay, continue, Ash, with the Jennifer Beals banding together.
Yeah, so smart decision by Jennifer Beals to get them all to band together, especially because women in industry is always going to be paid less for the same work. So to bring it back to the Vancouver thing, what ended up happening this past second season, because everything with COVID, you know, budgets going up for having on set all these like COVID people and COVID tests and everything, plus the regular being in LA, shooting in LA, sets, huge cast. Showtime also knows that The L Word is one of those shows that it brings in a lot of people for paying their subscriptions, and that's what they ultimately want. It's not some big like ratings bonanza show, but it doesn't really matter that much to Showtime, whereas it would for like ABC or NBC, because as long as they get your $12.99 or whatever it is a month, they're not too bothered. But The L Word has this unique thing of being a super, super interactive social media show. And it is one of their biggest performing social media shows, even though it's like a smaller show. So they are always trying to look for ways to save The L Word because it's like an easy little win for them. So this is the way it was told to me by someone who is very involved in the show and working on it. And they said that Showtime basically was trying to help the showrunner and writers, producers, and said, would you go to Vancouver to film the show, because it will help immensely with budget and everything like that. So obviously Marja said no, because she doesn't want to go to Vancouver. I also think, this is just my thoughts, they didn't say this, that there was this kind of thought of maybe it would help with getting maybe a bit of that like magic that they had in Vancouver, because I feel like everybody just like goes, does their job and goes home. Mm-hmm. And I think because there isn't that absolute strong bottleneck of leadership with, you know, with the original, you had, yeah, Eileen and Rose Trochet and all these people at Guinevere Turner that really were passionate about the show, loved it. And then they also worked so closely with the cast that everybody was just bonded and together. And I think because everybody's so separated on this show, like even watching the show, they don't have these big group scenes. They're not all super close. Like how many scenes have Bette and Finley been in? I don't think even one.
But also this speaks to a larger thing. I mean, that's really interesting about the Vancouver thing. Like, this is never a show that I would watch like on television. Like I'm watching it because of, yeah, the new characters just aren't well drawn in any way. And people always say, what would you do to fix the show? And the answer is, it's unfixable, because you started out with characters that were on such weak footing, the new characters that they're trying to launch and like kind of take over. It's never going to work, because if you compare that to the first season, the first few episodes of The L Word, those characters were so well drawn, and also, even more importantly, they were so well cast. They cast stars. Like, they found hidden stars, like Kate Manning and Lisha Haley and Erin Daniels and people that were, like, even, like, Rachel Shelley was no, who is that? You know, they found people who had star quality, and the only success they had this go around was with Sapi Damuafi.
Yeah, well, imagine if they had cast as well with the rest of them, like on Sepi's level.
Ash and I talk about this all the time. I think it's because they're starting them so young. Although Kate Manning was like 24. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but they need to. This isn't it. It's never going to work with these characters or these actors. My other question is, why are they only casting trans men? This is supposed, the L Word was supposed to be a show that centered women's story, right? The original show was a glossy soap opera about women's stories. This show is about quote unquote queer people's stories, aka everyone's stories. And when you try to be everything, you wind up being nothing. And that's the other major problem with the show.
But why would you not have a trans woman on the L Word? Like,
it's not the show. This is just a show I would never watch.
But then also, why would you have a trans woman on the show and then not use her as a trans woman?
Apparently, Jamie Clayton. I think she was asked, like, oh, would you want this character to be trans or would you want to be cis? And she said, oh, I'd be cis. But, like, the writers can overwrite that. But here we are.
To be a fly on the wall of the writer's room.
Oh, my God.
I love you guys. Tease your upcoming episode, which you did with M. Weinstein, who directed 4 episodes this season. Yes. M. Weinstein, by the way, was in the writer's room of League of Their Own, which is my favorite show of the year.
We have an episode coming out, hopefully tomorrow, so as I finish editing, with M. Weinstein, who directed episode 3, 4, 7, and 8. And we asked about them even directing the episode that Gigi ends up leaving, and Danny and Gigi. But probably the highlight of the episode for me personally was Jill Maxey also was our guest. Jill Maxey's the first assistant director for season 3 and 2, which is basically like the boss of the crew, and she schedules all the shoots. And Jill is absolutely, like, you don't get any messing around with Jill. She's very straightforward, but she is a massive Bette and Tina fan, and M, Chris, and Jess are on one side, and then Jill and I, you know, the Bette and Tina people on one side. It's really funny. So I'm looking forward to people seeing it.
Also, I loved the episode you did last season with, her name is Sandra something.
Yeah, Sandra Valdi.
What was her role? Because she was amazing. Everyone, if you're into this, you should listen to this episode of the podcast.
She was the director of photography for seasons 1 and 2. And honestly, the stuff that she told us was so interesting, and just things that you would never know if you didn't find out from someone like her, who was so involved in seasons 1 and 2.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
I
think we all learned a lot. Ash, where can everyone find you online? And then after Chris, where can everyone find you online?
You can find me on my channel, Ash Silver, or I even have a second channel that talks about like fraud and scams, coffee and cults. Come and visit us if you want to talk about the L Word.
And Chris?
You can find us on Instagram under the L Word Online. And also the website, thelwordonline.com.
Thank you guys so much. This was fun.
Thanks, Jess.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. You can follow me, JessXNYC, across all social media, Instagram, and definitely subscribe to the YouTube channel that is Hot Takes and Deep Dives, and my name, Jess Rothschild, where you can watch videos of all of these interviews.